listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have singer-songwriter Jackson Rosenfeld. How are you, Jackson?
I'm good. Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Yeah, man. I know you go by Jackson Rosa. Tell me how that, like, what made you come up with that?
Well, I think when you met me originally, way back when, it was using my traditional name, but there was a lot of brand confusion. Because of the spelling. So, yeah, it's basically a close pseudonym. It's pretty close.
It's hyphenated.
Hyphenated. And the spelling is, you know, includes my J-A-X-O-N into it. So,
you know, what's funny, simple. When I was coming up, you know, everybody was like, you know, Nikhil Kalula is pretty wordy. Why don't you go by Nick Hill? And I was like, no, there's no way I'm going to go by Nick Hill. That's not my name. If you can't figure out my name, then you don't deserve the music. So I love when people don't change, but I also don't mind when people do change, because I know so many artists that, like, they'll be born with a name, and then there'll be so many artists with that name or brands with that name, and they have no choice but to change. So you made the pivot, and do you think it's been beneficial just because it's been easier for people to kind of recognize or understand?
Yeah, actually. So it's kind of a nerdy thing, actually. It's a search engine optimization. So it's, at the end of the day, if you're trying to, you know, rank number one on Google and kind of have people find you, I've got my project name, which is Get Jackson, just kind of like the overarching project.
Right.
And then I needed, you know, I wanted people to feel not confused. They were to search the spelling of my name. So.
And is your original spelling of your first name, is that original, or did you change that?
No comment.
Ah!
I'm just going to leave it for the listeners. That's
cool. Leave a little mystery, dude. Leave a little mystery. So tell me, what was the moment of zen that made you want to become a musician? Was it a family member that played guitar, or was it like a song you heard on the radio? What was that moment of zen for you that said, I want to be a musician, this is it?
Earliest memory is, this is actually was my dad's piano back here that you see in the thing. And he and I would duet on the piano together. He's, you know, passed away in 2010, but I still have that piano. Totally fine. And, that was my first intro. And I really wanted to play the guitar when I was 9. And my mom said, how about you try piano first? We don't know how long this whole thing is. Is it going to be a phase or not? And then from there, I, you know, really committed. And after that point, a few guitar lessons later, I was basically self-taught, and I just worked on putting together a little MIDI music studio in my garage. I, you know, scrounged around, if you will, for so long to find what I could use to do it. It was like the year 2000 or 2001. So an old graphite iMac with OS 9 and an old software called eMagic, and no YouTube tutorials, no nothing, just a stack of, a stack.
Manuals?
Manuals, and just a little 10-year-old trying to figure all these things out. So it started with a mix of songwriting and music production, and I guess I would say the emotional reason I was going through a lot growing up, as a lot of songwriters kind of tend to have a background like that. And for me personally, I was diagnosed with a few things that just isolated me from other kids.
Right.
And it was just the easiest way of direct expression. So it just clicked really early on.
What's really funny is, I had a piano teacher. Her name was Mrs. Getz. She was the best, you know, and it's like she would teach me, and I'd never practice as much as I probably should have, and I would learn these little, like, minuets and things. And I just, like, I remember when she would start playing, like the Oogie Oogie Blues, like, you know, the little blues shuffles that, like, a piano teacher will show you. And I'd be like, oh, what's that? And, like, I never got to the piano shuffles, and I ended up quitting piano. And it wasn't because of her. I was learning classical music with singing. I didn't want to learn it again on piano. And it's like I went back to it because of the Beatles. The Beatles, I was like, oh, my God, Let It Be. Hey, Jude. Oh, I can figure these songs out by ear. Mm-hmm. And it's like that emotional love and that bond with them is what brought me back to piano. So it's kind of interesting. I always feel like sometimes music teachers are trying to teach you the techniques or the best, you know, ways to go about it. And their techniques and things are not wrong. But it's just like it's hard to captivate a young mind to make them want to do the work when they don't really maybe understand the techniques or the value of them or understand the value of the music. You know what I mean? It's like,
agreed. Yeah, I totally agree.
They're drawn to what you're working on to put that time into it. And yeah. You kind of like explored that on your own and found refuge in practicing. What were the kind of songs that you were practicing or the artists that you were learning just by yourself? Or like, were you writing right away? Tell me what that was like.
So yeah, I had a lot of Beatles in the home for sure. Just like you, I had a lot of access to that. I had older parents, so it was a very interesting mix of songs in the house. It wasn't like I had an 80s era family. It was more like I had a dad that was born in 1934. Wow. And like, and so it was any mix of Tony Bennett and, you know, old school, like big band stuff. That's all awesome. The way up through my mom's era, which was more boom, you know, baby boomer, was more Dylan and Beatles. And she introduced me to a lot of blues early on, quite like yourself. Muddy Waters, Buddy Guy, the Delta Blues. So my first guitar teacher was actually a really incredible finger picker and blues player. And so it was really early on, was introduced to a lot of blues artists. And some early like New Orleans jazz. And so just a lot of eclectic stuff in the home that was just kind of floating around. I personally, as I got into my adolescence, really formed a bond with Neil Young, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, the Beatles, just anything with a, from a piano ballad perspective. But Neil Young was, yeah, just folksy, like, people that really dove into their writing, and you know, songwriters.
That's awesome. I love all those songwriters. I love all those influences. I'm surprised you got into a lot of those early, those old blues artists so early, because it took me time. Like, I always, like, I remember my dad brought me, he went to Chicago and he brought me a CD of Buddy Guy. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And I put it on and I was like, yeah, this just sounds like old school. This is cool. I like it. This is cool. I like it. But I didn't fall in love with it and really understand the blues until way later. And I think a lot of it came from the guitar playing aspect. It was like, I've always loved the blues and respected it. But I mean, man, I really got into it in the last, I'd say, 5-10 years, where it was just like, oh, man, this is taking over my soul. This is everything. So Did you have like a moment with any particular sound that you were like, wow, this is what I want to make when I make music?
Yeah, you know, it was kind of maybe a little bit overwhelming because I just wanted to do everything in every which way. And I would say if it was just me on a piano or guitar, that's where kind of Neil Young came into the picture. That's where, you know, Randy Newman came into the picture.
Love Randy. He's one of my favorites.
Absolutely love. People of my age range or like even a little younger, it's very rare if I can find anyone who knows or appreciates him like I do.
Oh, I love him. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, but just underrated.
Yes, underrated. Very underrated. He's a songwriter. And yeah, you know, exactly. It's funny, I met Neil Young at South by Southwest, and I was like, I gave him one of my CDs. He was signing CDs for a bunch of people. And he ended up signing the copy of CD that I gave him. And he was like, here. And I was like, no, that's for you. And he's like, oh. And he put it in his pocket. It was so funny because I was just like, hey, man, this is for you. And he just was like signing all these things. And he signed my own CD. And then I was like, no, it's for you. He's like, oh, okay, I'll listen to it. I promise. You know,
but I have some strange. Yeah, I have some actually. I would have a signed CD from him too from when I was little. But it was very happenstance. I never met him. A family friend of a family friend of someone's caretaker told Neil Young about me. And he ended up signing a thing and they sent it to me in the mail. That's said, awesome. Keep on rocking, Jackson.
Dude, that's sweet. That's very.
So there's all these little weird kind of stories of me running across eclectic, you know, singer songwriters from a young age, Tom Waits as well.
You listen to a lot of like really storied songwriters. Like these are pretty kind of like old school Renaissance songwriters. So I love that. Yeah. A lot of those.
And I'm not a snob either. Like I love absolutely anything. Here's what I'll tell people. I love absolutely anything that has a good melody. Yeah. So if they show me an EDM song or a modern pop song or a hip hop song, I really attach to that first.
Yeah.
So I just at you know risk of sounding like a music elitist, like I love absolutely anything with a great melody.
I'm the same, and it's like I love a good voice, but it doesn't always have to be a good voice. I just love a good melody and good words. But I also love when somebody takes meticulous amounts of detail to put it into their work, to balance mixing or whatever it is. There's something about that I just really love, you know, when somebody takes that attention to detail. A lot of artists don't always do that. Some artists do, but I definitely hear it when somebody does. And it's kind of remarkable when you hear somebody that takes that amount of attention to detail. Like you listen to old Queen records or you listen to Zeppelin records or even like newer stuff. I listen to Timberlake stuff and I listen to like, you know, The Weeknd stuff, and like you hear there's great production in a lot of that stuff. So there's definitely artists that put that as a forefront, you know, into their work. But then there's a lot of artists that just like churn it out, and that's cool too. I get it. That's what they have to do for, you know, to make contracts meet contract standards or whatever they got to do. But there's always a difference when you see like artists making music. What's your creative process? Do you start with lyrics? Do you start with grooves? Do you start with something, a riff? What's your creative process like?
I think there's like I can give you a top three. I feel like the first, because it's never exactly the same, and it's actually good just from a mechanical perspective to start from a different place each time if you can attempt to. But for me, I feel like it's that improv babble songwriting session where I'm at a piano or a guitar and it's a state of flow type of moment where I'm just improvising. So an idea or riff comes from the improvising, and then the whole track is built off of that one starter idea. That's a great way it's that spontaneity that I love about that process. The other way would be no songwriting, no lyrics, just a hook, a melodic idea, just a chord progression that I can repeat over and over again until I find the pieces that match within it and around it. And then thirdly, I feel like I tend to write super folksy story songs if I do it this way, but it just depends on what the intention is of the start of the song. But then there's just lyrics first, and which is good because you can disconnect the part of your brain that's trying to come up with all the other stuff and all the other chaos.
Right.
And you can just focus on that. And that might be good if you don't want to overthink the production or the chord progression. You want to just savor that. And you might come up with a completely random or different idea of, you know, chords or melodic structures to put under those lyrics. So it just depends on what it calls for. And sometimes I might start over, you know, if it ends up down the wrong path, like anything. But first choice is what I would take is the improvisation sitting down for 30 minutes until the first spark.
I love coming up with a riff and then coming up with like gibberish lyrics or a melody and then having that shape into, that's my favorite when it comes like that. But there are times where it's like, I'll just get words and I'll just start writing words down. And then I'm like, I end up having to fit the music, whatever I write, to whatever's written. And I kind of like, what I really love is the riff thing, because it's, you know, the music's come, it's music shaping the words instead of like the music's shaped to the words. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like kind of like two different ways to kind of go about it. But I feel you. Sometimes you just can't control where it's coming from and how it's coming to you in that in that way, you know? Do you have like a certain style that you prefer to write in?
So as far as music or as far as lyrics?
Yeah, like genre or lyrics.
Oh, genre.
Narrative or style of music.
Yeah, so in general, the alternative rock category is kind of where things default into. I would say it's just my natural like choice production. I'd say pop rock, you could also describe it as that. And then the other kind of subgenre, maybe just eclectic pop, like art pop. And in that sense, a little bit of contemporary. So I've been producing a lot of songs that are going to come out to middle to end of this year that are more orchestral pop. So I've got string players coming in, and it's going to give a little bit of more modern ELO. And
that's cool.
Just a little more, you know, orchestral rock and ballads and stuff. It's kind of the way that I wanted to do things way back, but I didn't have access to string players. And I now that I do, now that I've got some session players I really love to come in and do it, that genre really speaks to me. It's do you know the artist Woodkid at all?
No, who's that?
He's like a French artist, but he sings in, you know, English. But he has, yeah, he does like a cinematic, I would say not Baroque pop, but neo folk
pop
kind of thing. So you know, songs that are, some of them are going to be pop and some of them are going to have maybe the feeling that they would be a soundtrack. Right. Yeah. And so I love anything that just fits into that. You could call it cinematic blank.
Well, you know what I've discovered too, it's like we're in kind of this cool Renaissance period of music, because I have never in my life been so overwhelmed with the amount of choices and artists there are in music. Like, it's incredible. And it's like, a lot of them are great. And it's just, I don't even have the bandwidth to listen to catch everybody, because there's just so many every day. There's like hundreds, maybe thousands of new artists coming out almost every day. And it's like, it's so hard to catch them all. So I love when people are like, have you heard of so-and-so? And I'm like, no. And then I initially will just go listen to them, just because I love catching new music. And when somebody's excited about another artist, I'm like, yeah, you know, show me. That's what I love to hear. Let's play something of yours. What do you want to play first?
Let's go from most recent to least, if that's cool with you. That's
cool with me.
The most recent, one of the more recent ones is called Every Time I Run.
All right, here's Every Time I Run by Jackson Rosenfield.
Hey,
Very cool, man. Very cool. That's a good running song, man. What inspiration rhyme that was.
You got to do it. What's that?
What was the inspiration behind writing the song?
That one was, I think that started as a melody. And yeah, it was like, da 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 da. That was kind of the, you know, basis. And then, I think that I just really wanted to explore kind of a story song about someone that not only hides away from their emotions, but just basically someone who's on the run, like life on the road, and this person that has just shut down the world from everyone, and just like it's him against the world. So it's that, you know, I guess it could work really well as a running song, because it is kind of like, you know, you're shielding your eyes from everyone. So it's this, you know, the sensation of someone who just became purely introverted, and, you know, it's because of pain, it's because of trauma. So he just has to keep moving from town to town.
I like it. It's because it's got a lot of energy in the, like, the pocket of the groove, and it's got like a really cool, like, vocal arrangement, because you have all these like colors of sounds and textures. But it's like upbeat, so I'm like, man, this makes me want to go work out. Like, it's a good, that's a good workout song right there, you know.
I really love a good confusing, conflicting energy. If I'm being real, like just you know, maybe a dark theme, maybe a little bit of you know, a hopelessness of the lyrics, but the song underneath it just maybe tries to get you away from that hopelessness at the same time.
Yeah, I loved it. I love the, because you could tell it's got some darkness, but you can interpret it as being kind of like really on the surface and very kind of like positive. You know what I mean? So
that's good to hear.
If you, it's got that like dichotomy of both, you know, which is what I love. I love like when songs can be vague and then songs are very specific. I like both those extremes, because I think interpretation is huge when it comes to listening. You know what I mean? But that's upbeat, man. You made the groove. Tell me, like, because of the lyrics, did you make the groove so upbeat because it was about like on the run, being on the run?
Yeah, there's some songs that I've been producing more recently where I just want to have more of an energetic, in that song, the style of rhythm is kind of more of a breakbeat. And that specific thing is, just a very energetic rhythm. But it just keeps it interesting. It just, it's like a driving force, whether you see it as an anxiety of the character of the song or a motivational, it just kind of keeps things interesting. So I don't know. I just like to do that, you know, if I can help it.
Yeah, no, I love that, because it's like super modern too. It's like, it's got all those like electronic influences, but it's got some rock influences. It's got some like kind of like new age and also modern pop influences. You can hear a lot of your record collection, which is cool.
Yeah, reason I'm showing it is because it kind of fits out of the box. It kind of fits my more modern sensibilities than maybe the ones we're going to hear later on. But it's, thank you for that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, man. I always, you know, I think when it comes to songs, the thing that I love most about songs is they direct us into new frontiers. And sometimes that's like pushes us into a style that we're like, whoa, I didn't know I was going to come up with this. And then sometimes it's also like, whoa, this is a throwback that I didn't think would go into this kind of vibe and feel. Mm-hmm. So I always have a combination of like new songs and old songs on a record, because I feel like as long as the collection of the songs can be cohesive, you're allowed that room to kind of like stretch into other kind of like genres and dimensions a little bit, you know?
Oh yeah. I really agree. I honestly think that if you have old songs that you never published officially and that you bring them back into a session and just flip the script, try something really different. I have a song that I wrote in middle school about my school experience that I looked back on and I said, you know what? This really does kind of match a little bit of the anxiety of school. Now I have all these kids during the pandemic and during high school, middle school, dealing with all this newfound stress,
right,
of this era. And so I basically rewrote it just a little bit and being like, this is still pretty current. And then don't know what I was listening to at the time, but I remember it's a lot of gospel. And I remember these new artists that had just been signed to it's Jay-Z's label.
Right.
And so they have a super old school Motown, like, backbeat, like all their songs are super incredible. I'm sorry, I can't remember exactly their name, but I saw that. I'm like, oh, that's incredible that they're featuring artists that are, you know, that like to do old school inspired stuff. And I was just like, I just ended up internalizing that. I made a Motown style drum beat temporarily underneath it. I'm like, oh, this actually fits this song.
Yeah, this makes sense. Yeah, right.
Way better than I would have thought years ago. So
that's awesome. Well, let's play something else. What do you want to play next?
Let's play. I feel like a good counterpart to that one would be 29 Miles.
With another running song. Here we go. No, here's Jackson Rosa with 29 Miles.
Places I'll never see.
very cool. You have to explain that picture, first of all. What's the picture?
That is my, so that this is a song from my first album called Warning Catchy. So that was the album cover. Yeah, it's very, it is me, younger me, sprawled back on the floor after being blown away by like a loudspeaker or something. So yeah, it's popcorn records. It was a concept, and I had a mentor at the time whose wife is a talented photographer. And I was like, can we just do this in your studio and just get up on a ladder and, you know, I'll bring all the props and, you know, so yeah, it was very like DIY album shoot type
That's
thing.
Cool.
So,
That's cool. Have you seen the Dali picture where he's jumping up and there's like water thrown and there's a cat coming out of the water? And then there's like,
all I haven't.
Paintings. I'll have to send it to you because
please send it to me.
Kind of reminded me of that. I was like, this is cool. There's a story behind this photo. Yeah. What the influence is. Tell me about the influence and the inspiration behind the song.
Yeah. So, this kind of fits a little deeper into my rock inspiration pocket of, my Tom Petty, my blues, my love of blues and rock. So yeah, this song, it's just a body rocking kind of fun, you know, thing. And again, the reason I said it fits maybe into with the other one a little better is it is, in fact, a song about, it's a kind of depressing lyrics. It's, you know, this is how many things. I was just a little obsessed when I was writing with the number 29, but I kind of thought while I was writing this about the 27 club, you know, the historic thing with rock stars, passing away before that age. And yeah, that was probably the peak of the writing inspiration for it. It's been a while since I wrote it, but I think that was the original seed. Right. And it was just that feeling of like, I was just about to enter my 20s when I recorded that song, which is, you know, wild to think about. But that one was, I was just like, what is going to be of my life? You know, what is going to happen in my life? Am I going to get to see, am I going to get to see the wonders of the world? Am I going to get, you know, what can I do in this place? And, you know, so it's like that limiting kind of voice where it's just like, you know, 29 miles till I drift to sea. 29 years, where will I be? You know, it's just wanting to know something you just can't know. So they're just like wanting to understand yourself at a young age.
How old were you when you wrote that?
Let's see. That one, and specifically, you had mentioned including songs on your albums that you'd written at different times, right? These songs we're playing today are from two different albums, and I included ones that I'd written in elementary school and wow. ones I'd written in middle school that kind of led up to I worked in these albums when I was 19 going on 20.
Just doing a home studio job, or are you going into
So this was actually very interesting. I was very lucky to have people around after I graduated high school. I'd shot this band's music video and multiple of their music videos because I kind of cohabit the space of filmmakers and music. And I done them a lot of favors, but I was very excited when they said, we're going to co-produce these songs with you, Jackson. And not only that, my mentor is an incredible singer. Did some Michael McDonald backup vocals with me. Just like, you know, just some incredible talent that I was able to source. And we'd spend one day a week, one day every weekend for a whole year on these songs. Someone would be near my piano at my, you know, it was at my mom's house, like a room of my mom's house when I was still living there. And then it would be at his apartment. This was all in Northern California. And then there was only one time we went into maybe what you'd call an actual studio to track the drums. There's an incredible guitarist and drummer named Mike Taylor, who's in a band called the Wonder Bread Five. They're basically a cover band. They're like the biggest booked cover band, but very talented. And so he did the drums. That was in my mentor's studio, which is like a music school. So it wasn't a treated studio. So nothing, we did nothing in treated rooms. It was all very on the go mobile, which is incredible because we were able to pull off some incredible sounds together.
That's very cool. And like when you're listening to music, is it, and I always think about this for my own stuff. It's like, it always takes me a little bit to listen to a song of my own where I'm like, okay, it's done. It's out of the oven. It's ready to be.
Absolutely.
And then when I listen to somebody else's songs, I'm like, I wonder if they went through the same ridiculous process of like knowing it's ready, or if like somebody else made the call and the artist is just like, whatever the label thinks, whatever the producer thinks, whatever my guitar player thinks, or whatever it is, like, tell me what that process is for you, listening to something, you know, that you haven't worked on versus listening to something you have worked on.
Well, first of all, the smaller you can keep your team, the better. As many, like, less decisions as you can make, final decisions you can make. That was kind of the wonderful thing about the projects that I've done so far, is it's very tight-knit. I will say, yeah, it could be anything from guitar take to the 60th guitar take and wanting to throw the whole thing across the room in a fit of rage, or it could be the final mixes, you know, the mastering. So I think for me, it's vocals and final mix are the phases, like producing the vocals and getting to the point where you've got the mixes ready, prepared to be mastered. That is always the choke point. And I would just say that's where it gets really difficult and where your ears can start playing tricks on you if you're not careful. So it's good to take, if you are to do something at that level of multiple songs at once, take a week off.
You know what? It's what I find is like, man, I could spend 6 months just mixing one song. I don't, but I could, you know, because I could listen to it over and over and over until I know it's absolutely right, but I know I'll start to hate it by then. So I have this instinct where it's like, okay, I know it's close enough and I know it's good enough.
Yeah.
You know, because then it's still, I still enjoy it when I listen to it, but it's like, it's so hard to let go and abandon the mix.
Yeah. And I would also say, something I thought about recently, and I totally agree with that, is play it for five non-musicians. Play it for at least 5 to 10 non-musicians. See what they think, because they might have a different perspective. They might have an idea of they might say something simple as, no, the voice, I couldn't hear the lyrics enough or the voice enough, right? But they won't criticize it like a fellow musician or fellow producer would. And at the end of the day, we do live in an echo chamber where if you're only going to hear feedback from musicians and producers, which is good, which is very important, but you aren't hearing a consumer's opinion.
What's funny is I actually never have my bandmates come into mixing sessions because you can they come in, they track, and then like 8 or 9 months later, they get the finished record in their hands, and they're always like, "Man, this sounds amazing!" And it's like, I do that because I don't want all the opinions. I want to make the record that I know I want to make.
And too many cooks.
Too many cooks in the kitchen. But it's tough sometimes because sometimes you're just like, yo, I could make this guitar pan to the right and you want that other opinion, or, you know, and it's not always an engineer that will give that opinion that you need. I kind of tend to get that from other artists more than even musicians. But sometimes I just like, I want to make this record the way I'm going to make it. And that's going to be what it is because I want to hear it a certain way. And I just, you know, sometimes you can't trust somebody else. You can't trust that non-musician or even the musician's opinion because you're not being an artist at that point. It's like, you have to cultivate it to a certain level, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. Or like just show it to a cute and opinionated girl. Show it to someone in your car. Show it to someone, like, at least someone who, like, is opinionated, like, right. who will say right. something, who's not just going to try to flatter you.
Right.
But that's always good. And, yeah, enough time and space away from it. I would also say, and this is kind of like I'm giving this advice, but it's I'm saying it out loud for myself to hear. The taking any sort of organization or task management into account, you know, treating these music releases as a business owner right. instead of as a, you know, as something you need to finish eventually
right.
Can really hone down what you need to do when, and you can then structure out the amount of days, you know, it's going to take for this part. So you have it all itemized. You have session days, you have the edit days that there's going to be a day where you only do take out little pop sounds and right. edits. You don't do anything else. And so giving it that sort of structure and then saying like you put it into blocks and a schedule is really helpful. And it can actually get you to step away from the pitfalls of just meandering on a track. Yeah.
Yeah. I tend to like, I find that I kind of have a process when I go through a record. It's like, especially if it's song to song, then I like, no, initially I'll listen to it and I'll say, all right, I got to change this, this, and this, and that. And then I'll go into the studio knowing, okay, right away, I got fresh ears. Let's change this and this and that and mm-hmm. edit all those things or whatever. Or maybe it's a mix. Maybe it's like, oh, I want to pan this to the other speaker or, you know, have, you know, it's little things that not everybody catches. There's so many nuances in every record. That even like I did them and then I'll listen to the record 10 years later and I'll be like, oh my God, I forgot that's there. That's so cool. And it'll surprise me in a way that I'm like, oh, that's cool. So I kind of feel like when you're making art, you're like right here and then you get some distance to kind of see what it yeah. is.
And to someone else, it might just be something that adds character.
Right.
It might just be as simple as someone, you know, someone would say, oh, I never really noticed that. I just thought that was the character of the track. You know, I thought that that added a little grit to it, you know? So, you know, I have to do the same thing. I have to kind of, but I try to step out of a purism as a music. I have to go from upset, like quality control minded to be able to step out from that out of music kind of purism of production purism
right.
and detach and then go, okay, cool. Now, enough quality control. You can quality control yourself to death.
Right.
So just you know, make it can have a little edge. It's okay to have a little edge. I have a
friend that's like working on a record, and he's like 3 years into the record, and he's still doing mixes. And it's like, man, that could drive a person crazy because
yeah,
I don't know how you get out of the record by that point, you know? So it's that being said, as a guitar player, as a guitar player, who are your biggest influences as far as your playing? I know Hendrix is one because we've jammed up.
Oh yeah, we did. I love. Well, it's kind of yeah, just a very wide array. I mean, I loved Buddy Guy and Muddy Waters. I loved blues artist B.B. King as well. I love. Oh my God! Yeah, obviously Jimi Hendrix. Jeff Beck is pretty awesome.
Oh, my
yeah, I kind of, I'm not too much of I tend to be more of the songwriter part of my brain and kind of arranger and producer, composer part of my brain. Like that kind of where I attach more of my influences to. As a guitarist, I don't geek out as much as the typical guitarist would when it comes to being a fanboy. Or being hyper obsessed. Now I'm thinking about Santana, Carlos Santana.
Yeah.
And John Mayer as a more modern. I like what he does. I like his chord, like people that do chord voicings in a way where.
I just love his soloing. And I covered one of his songs recently, Good Love Is On The Way. I mm-hmm. love that tune. It's such a cool song to play, the chords, everything. I'm like, this is a killer tune. just subtle.
Yeah. And I think that you could just even simply look at chord progressions and, you know, in his songwriting and find some incredible gems.
Yeah. Well, let's play your third song. What are we going to play next?
So the third one, this one's called Weird. And it's a lot of people that have talked to me really like this one. It's one that I wouldn't have thought people would have liked because it was one of the third songs that I ever wrote. It was like in the first version of it was in elementary school. So it was actually one of those, you know, it's just a song about not belonging, you know, as a little kid. So yeah, that's the gist of it.
Here's Jackson Rosa with Weird.
Being kind of weird is underrated. You don't really know if you love to hate it. So do you really know the people that love us? The clouds and the wind and the sky above us. So how?
Spacesuit. What is that spacesuit?
That's little old me at one day at a space camp.
The one in Florida?
No, it was somewhere in the Central Valley in California.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Did
yeah,
you get
yeah.
Like a anti-gravity chamber by chance?
I think I wasn't. I showed up there with my dad. Wanted me to go. My dad was a pilot. You know, as part of his, like one of his big things that he did. And so he wanted me to go. I think I was too young to go, but he managed to convince some. He's like, my son really wants to, I think he really wanted to be there too. So, so anyway, the point is that I got there just ridiculous with a huge spacesuit on this little kid. And, I don't think did the whole, you know, I think there were some rules. We didn't do the whole activities, but I remember, yeah, that's one of those old pictures in the photo box. So yeah, that album I released under a different artist name at one point. And so the re-release or the redistribution I did with this graphic, cause I felt like it encompassed, you know, a lot of this album is called Life with Oxygen. Life with Oxygen. It's coming of age. It's like a very coming of age style album. A lot of unrequited love songs. A lot of, you know, growing pains style songs. So
yeah, it's funny. It's like, you know, some of those songs when I was writing them, you don't realize how prolific you are. And it's like now as I'm older, I'm like, oh, I don't write like that. But I go back to those songs. I'm like, man, this is a good song. I need to record this. This is, you know, you don't realize how like just how it's flowing out of you because you're feeling all the feels and all the emotions of life. So it's just, you know, drawing inspiration constantly. You're drawing inspiration constantly.
Sometimes your songs are more mature than you are. Sometimes you have to grow up and grow into your own songs. Sometimes, you know, and then you come back, you make some edits, but that's how I felt with a few songs is just like, I feel like I understand. I know exactly why I wrote this. I know exactly when I wrote this.
Right.
But yeah, it's just important to explore. What was it? 1,000 Miles by Vanessa Carlton. Like that was one that she in that interview said, I had written this. This was one of the first things I wrote when I was in college or, you know, when I was in school. She didn't want to make that the single on her album because it was just such an early idea.
Wow. That's crazy.
Right. So that one was an example of like that. But in its simplicity and its like wonder, it actually works the best to use it and bring it and do something with it. So
do you play out at all? Do you play these songs out anywhere?
Yeah. So after the pandemic, during the pandemic, I went into hiding. I went into my bunker, if you will, as far as live performance. And I really hunkered down with a lot of stuff and, you know, improved my life in many ways that I feel like I needed to do in order to write my best work and to improve my space and my mental health. So, you know, I really took a little bit of a breather from live performance and just, you know, continued writing and producing. As of this year, I plan to, I've been in contact and, been starting to book stuff for summer, and for, fall. So yeah, the plan is intact. I also feel like, you know, here in Hollywood and North Hollywood and around the streets, there's more walking traffic now. It took a while for things to feel alive again.
Right.
And it just feels like the right time. And it's also because I didn't have that many new songs to promote. I was still had a track list that was spread throughout the decade. And so I needed to make sure that I have, you know, new stuff to promote and that I'm not just outplaying just my old songs. I'd like these songs to be something people can come up with or come back to and discover, the ones we played today. In my catalog, which is super important, but I want to make sure that the new ones I'm working on are, you know, out in the wild.
Absolutely. Where can people find you if they want to find you online?
They can find me at GET, so getjackson, JAXON.com. Instagram on the same handle, getjackson. You can Google my name, Jackson Rosa, JAXONROSA. Or Get Jackson. Find me on Instagram. I'm most active there. TikTok, same handle. And YouTube. I've been starting to pay a lot more attention to my YouTube channel. So, yeah, go and subscribe. Go and find me. DM me. Let me know if there's anything you want to hear or anything that you're interested in or if you have a favorite track.
Well, Jackson, thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood. We're going to have to do another jam soon, man. We're long overdue for a jam.
We are very long overdue. More Hendrix. And actually, let's do some Randy Newman this time.
I'm ready, dude. I'm always down to do some Randy Newman, dude.
Wonderful.
On behalf of Jackson, myself, I think my bulldog Otis, you're about to see it. Oh, Otis!
Oh my God!
Otis!
Adorable!
Isn't he awesome? He's awesome.
He's awesome.
That's always a good opening when he comes in. He always comes in during the interviews randomly, but yeah, sometimes the door is closed. But that one, I didn't close it properly.
Dogs love the sound of my voice. Yeah,
you're just like, ow!
Exactly. I'm a howler.
Well, on behalf of Jackson, myself, Otis, and Sam, we'll see you guys here next week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. We'll see you. Wouldn't want to be ya. Cheers.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.